Mics are live.
Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, September 19th, 2019, 10:02 a.m. And boy, that just it pains me to say September 19th. The upside is some fun things to do in the fall, but the other part is after fall follows winter. But anyway, we'll enjoy the weather while we can. I'm Commissioner Brian Crashus. Also present with me are Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Randy Christman. So we do have a quorum. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchek?
I'm fresh home from Minneapolis. I was there for the last couple of days for a MISO quarterly board meeting, which was very good. And I'm serving on the Organization of MISO States Board, one of the representatives. And I'm pleased with the progress at the meeting because one of the things we've been working on for a while is there's an organization in North Dakota, the Lignite Energy Council, that has been wanting to get involved in MISO and has come up against some roadblocks. And I think they are officially a part of a stakeholder group or will be shortly. So they'll have a seat at the table in the discussions there, which have a lot of impact on lignite coal and its use as a fuel for power generation in the MISO region. And so I think it's really important for them to have a seat at the table, to be part of those conversations and to express the benefits that their fuel offers that others don't have. And so I'm very pleased that with that outcome and look forward to having them part of the discussions, which are really getting more and more focused on attributes that need to be properly priced to keep reliability strong in the grid. And that's something that MISO is very seriously undertaking. So the timing for Lignite Energy Council to be involved is perfect. They couldn't have delayed any longer. So I think it was a successful couple of days and look forward to working through those issues with them and all the other members of that group.
Yeah, well, that's incredibly important work. I know you have been advocating for that for a long time. So really, really good news. And we're lucky to have your leadership with MISO. One thing I didn't omit, maybe I have one small opening comment, and it's not so small. It's a big piece of news, and we have a new employee that nobody can see in terms of the video, but trust me, he is here. Caleb Simberger is with us on pipeline safety, and very pleased to have you on board. Commissioner Christman.
Welcome aboard, Caleb. Good job on that MISO activity, Julie. I drove up to Watford City yesterday for the North Dakota Petroleum Council annual meeting. I've been to a fair amount of these over the years, and it's kind of ebbed and flowed a little bit. If you were to evaluate the enthusiasm and optimism, and I thought that yesterday there was a lot of enthusiasm and optimism. Heard some really good presentations, just to name a couple of them. Reese Hawes from the governor's office talking about that pore space legislation that passed this spring. Mark Fox from the Three Affiliated Tribes talking about all variety of tribal state relations and that sort of thing. Of course, Dave Glott from the Department of Environmental mm-hmm. Quality. Our friend and sadly now the emergency manager from Carolyn Jappe from McKenzie County, talking about her experience and knowledge gained on emergency services. So bottom line is, most of these things aren't really our issue technically, but the overall future growth up there is, because we all have come to learn not only with the siting of the things that require siting, but then the power demands that activity causes. And so we're going to have a lot more work ahead of us involving the oil and gas industry in North Dakota. but a lot of good things are happening, and it was so refreshing, and especially Chairman Fox made note of it. But I think a lot of us who were in there for the first time at that Rough Rider Center that is attached to or part of the school there in Watford City, just pretty amazing what has happened. And, you know, we drive by and through and see the growth and development of Watford City as well as other oil patch towns, but probably especially Watford City. But you get in and see what the students have there now for a learning environment, and it's pretty amazing.
All right.
Can I add to that one quick thing? So,
absolutely.
Randy, well, we were all part of the days in the 80s and 90s when all the young people were leaving. My niece, who just graduated from NDSU, is now a teacher at Watford City High School. So oh, wow. Can you imagine that happening 20 years ago, 30 years ago? A young, fresh out of college teacher moving out to teach Phi-Ed in Watford City. So it's pretty cool. And she joins two of my nieces and nephews in Dickinson and three of them in Williston, all 20, 30 or so and younger. So it's pretty exciting to see what's happening in terms of the young people settling in those areas too.
Yeah.
All right. We have five items on consent and the previous minutes. I move they be approved.
Second. Sorry.
Julie.
Sorry.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, I have two items on the regular agenda. The first is I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company 69 KV transmission segment and three substations, public convenience and necessity, case number PU-19-298.
Second.
On August 20th, 2019, Otter Tail Power Company filed an application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity authorizing the acquisition of certain equipment owned by Central Power Electric Cooperative, CPEC, at Otter Tail's Botno, Wapiton, and Rugby substations and a four-mile segment of Otter Tail 69 KV Roulette transmission line now owned by CPEC. The issue is to be considered in this matter whether public convenience and necessity will be served by acquisition and operation of the facilities, and secondly, whether the applicant is fit, willing, and able to provide service. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and reasons for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by October 31st, 2019. And if deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. For more information, you can contact the Public Service Commission here in Bismarck at 701-328-2400. And just to touch on the four-mile segment of the Otter Tail, or the 69 KV line, that I believe overall is a 34-mile segment or transmission line. The 4 miles that Otter Tail will be acquiring, it currently pays for the use of that through SPP. So this will transfer ownership from the cooperative to Otter Tail Power, and then Otter Tail Power will have a lesser fee by owning it and with SPP. So it'll come through as a lower, but there will still be a cost. But their position is that it will be a lower overall cost, and that's what we'll be looking at.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'm really pleased to see this. It's a simple thing, but it was really a mess when the whole Basin Electric joined SPP and Otter Tail is part of MISO, and they had some shared use in areas where they cooperatively owned certain parts of the transmission system. So this is a step towards clearing up some of that holdover in the transfer and in the joining of Basin to SPP, and I think this is going to be good for Otter Tail customers. It will save them money in the long run. So and simplify operations, I believe, as well.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Okay, my second item, I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000, suspend the rate, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company Transmission Facility Cost Recovery 2020, rates case number PU-19-311.
Second.
On August 30th, 2019, Otter Tail Power Company filed an annual update under its transmission facility cost recovery rider tariff. The proposed rate update for 2020 includes the cost for seven new transmission projects, one which I just mentioned, the 69 kV line acquiring that 4-mile segment, and a true-up amount from the current rate. The increase for a typical residential customer using 1,000 kilowatts per month would be 73 cents per month. And again, the same issues I had mentioned previously will be considered in this proceeding. Once again, anyone interested can comment on the application in writing. You're invited to do so if you're interested. And persons desiring a hearing must file a written request identifying their interest in the proceedings and the reason for requesting a hearing. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by October 31st, 2019. And once again, the number here at the Public Service Commission at the Capitol is 701-328-2400. And in total, this would be just over $5.7 million in terms of additional cost. I had mentioned the residential cost. One thing I don't bring up a lot, but large general customers are also impacted and actually pay for the brunt of this typically. And a large general customer will see an increase on their bill, if this is approved, of $106.16. So worth pointing out in terms of what it means to business and industry in the state, but we also want to make sure that the proper or the right projects are being done to ensure reliability and that we're moving power to customers in a reliable and timely fashion.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
All right, that completes my agenda items. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Otter Tail Power Company 345 KV transmission line, Dickey County siting application case number PU-13-840.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. On August 5th, these applicants filed an application for a modified certificate of corridor compatibility, a language change to clarify structure shifts, and a request to use new tree and shrub mitigation specifications. Those are the issues to be considered, are all the issues related to the location, construction, operation of the facilities, whether this shifts might be compatible with environmental preservation and efficient use of resources. Should the certificate be amended as requested, and should the tree and shrub mitigation specs be updated as requested? Those are tree and shrub mitigation specifications that were altered by the commission after the original ones that the company signed and agreed to in the original order in certificates. So those are the issues we'll be looking at. Anyone interested in commenting are invited to in writing, or if they desire a hearing, they must file a written request identifying their interest by November 12th.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
That's my only motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. Commissioner Chrisman.
I move the commission approve the decommissioning plan and the base cost estimate filed on August 27, 2019, with revisions noted in the letter filed on September 10, 2019, and further move the commission approve the self-guarantee filed on September 9, 2019, in Northern States Power Company, Foxtail Wind Project, Dickey County Decommissioning Plan and Cost, case number PU-18-339.
Second.
On August 27th of this year, NSP filed a decommissioning plan, cost estimate, and self-guarantee with the commission for the Foxtail Wind Facility. NSP provided cost estimates for a base option and two alternative options. The base option involved dismantling, downsizing, and scrapping the wind facility. The base cost estimate is approximately $21 million. They also included cost estimates for two alternatives. The alternatives exclude salvage value, among other changes that they had proposed. They also proposed a $16.6 million self-guarantee that would have been associated with that base cost estimate. However, it deducted approximately $4.3 million in scrap value from the guarantee. So on September 3rd, we held an informal hearing with NSP. Over the course of the informal hearing, two real issues surfaced. The first issue dealt with a typographical error on NSP's decommissioning plan, and I'll touch on that later. The second, probably bigger issue, was that NSP submitted a self-guarantee amount, which was reduced by the scrap value. So on September 9th, NSP filed a revised self-guarantee for the base cost estimate in the full amount of approximately $21 million. The amount does not deduct the scrap value. And furthermore, the cover letter noted that August 27th filing contained that typographical error I mentioned, and that just referenced that the removal depth for foundations, buildings, and ancillary equipment was 36 inches, but it should have been 48 inches. So the depth with this is now consistent with the commission's rulemaking at 48 inches. So staff recommends the commission approve the decommissioning plan and cost estimate with the revisions noted in the letter filed on September 10th, and further recommends that we approve the self-guarantee filed on September 9th. And I will just add on this subject, now we've come a long way, and we did our rules package, I don't know, a few years ago, and that was kind of divided in various ways, but one key distinction was existing wind farms at that point, which had to do something after their 10th year of operation, and some of them have hit that, and we've done them. I'm not sure if this is the first one now since, but if it's not the first one, I'm just going to highlight it anyway. But when we adopted our rules for new wind farms moving forward, they had to have a filing of financial guarantee for 5% of their expected construction costs while they were under construction, and then before beginning operations have this estimate and everything from an outside engineering company. And so this facility is expected to go online, I don't know if it's October 1st or the first few days of October. And so here is their plan, and hopefully we have the votes here today and get it approved, and they'll be able to go online and have everything in according to the rules. And I think it's a good thing.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
That was it's a good project for a number of reasons, and the decommissioning plan is one of them. It's fun to see those efforts come to actually reality and be put to use on the first time, and this will also be the first project that starts with the aircraft lighting detection system and from the first day of operation. So it's a big accomplishment in a couple of different areas.
I can't wait to drive down there some night and not witness it myself.
Is there any further discussion?
we've seen quite a number, call it round one of decommissioning plans that have come in, and there's been quite a range from, I believe, $77,000 to $320,000 per turbine has been submitted. So there's quite a bit of variation. Staff is in the process of reviewing the differences and trying to find common patterns. This is to be expected. This is, again, round one, and potentially it could be round one in the country in terms of looking at a comprehensive decommissioning plan for all facilities located within a state. In this case, it's North Dakota. So a lot of really great work has taken place to ensure that these are properly decommissioned and the money is there when the time comes. And then it's also something that evolves over time as well, because we're learning as we look at the various cost estimates and evaluating them, that there are differences. So it's only natural to ask the question why, and making sure that everyone has enough set aside to take care of this work. But I thought this in particular was an excellent plan in terms of how it was submitted. The amounts, the detail behind it, Wanzek did an excellent job as well with their part, and the company, I thought, just did an exceptional job in laying out their case, and it's detailed, and I'm very comfortable with the dollars that are allocated on this particular project.
You know, Mr. Chairman, you pointed something out that I was going to mention and neglected to. You'll note in just my comments, it's in a memo, but in my comments, I just mentioned the $21 million figure and not divided down into a per turbine cost. But for some reason, the companies tend to often talk about it in a per turbine cost, and so thus we do. And as I've talked to people around the state over these last few years, I think most people recognize that the costs vary because the turbine sizes vary, and of course the bigger ones are going to cost more to dismantle than the smaller ones. Also, hiring contractors, you know, if you have 200 turbines somewhere, it'd probably be less per turbine than if you have six or eight and have to bring heavy equipment out. But one of the other things that I've not found a lot of people recognizing up front, and so while we're in a broadcast meeting, I think it's important to point out, when people do talk about it in a per turbine cost, that includes decommissioning the whole wind farm, which in many cases will involve reclaiming roads. And if it's a wind farm that's pretty spread out, and especially if it's rougher terrain, those are all factored into that, and cleaning up the other things besides the turbines can have a big impact when you divide the total by the number of turbines. So a lot of variables that go into that, and I'm glad you pointed that out so we make sure people that are watching us or listening to us realize that.
Yeah, no, I think there's certainly a number of variables, although I will say I think $77,000 simply isn't enough. I don't think that figure will stand up when actual decommissioning occurs. But we'll have an opportunity to look at that. And then another piece that I think we'll want to explore moving forward is what happens with the associated transmission line that may reside outside of the project footprint. In one case, not too recently, the transmission line itself was almost 40 miles. And what happens to the 30 miles or the 35 miles of that particular line when decommissioning of the facility itself, the generating facility, occurs? So I think it's just the next step in a process that I think has been handled extremely well. And we'll learn again as we go, but it's a question that does need to be answered.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission present the 2019 North Dakota Award for Excellence in Surface Coal Mining and Reclamation to Great River Energy.
Second.
So this is another one that I'm really excited about. The PSC's State Reclamation Award Program sets out the criteria for presenting a reclamation award. It's typically a coal mining company, but has not always been. There's been other coal-related reclamation projects in the past, and this is one of them. So the Reclamation Division recommends that this year's award be presented to Great River Energy for their commitment to the safe, complete, and environmentally responsible reclamation of the Stanton Station. GRE's Stanton Station was built in 1966 and was a coal-fired generation facility located on the banks of the Missouri River near Stanton in Mercer County. The Stanton Station had a generation capacity of 188 megawatts and provided dependable electricity to GRE's member co-ops for 50 years. Production ended on May 1st of 2017, and the process of dismantling, recycling, and disposing of equipment and materials took over a year. The plant was imploded on October 11th of 2018, so almost a year ago. GRE expects to have phase two of the restoration and reclamation, including land contouring and pond work, completed by the end of this year, and native vegetation will be seeded in the spring of 2020. All the metals and oils and lubricants were recycled. Equipment, a lot of it was put to use at other GRE facilities or sold as sold to others, and useful supplies such as furniture were donated to some local community groups. I want to emphasize on this one, this is a facility that was built before the Siting Act, so there's no certificate or anything that we have here that would require them to do that. GRE is not a rate-regulated company, so we don't have a reach over them through rate regulation. This is a volunteer effort, and I assume maybe other commissioners got a call too, but I remember receiving a call from GRE, which news that very much disappointed me, and I still find it somewhat regrettable that the business decision was made to close this facility. But they were kind enough to reach out and gave me a call, I remember, just very briefly, a matter of hours before their press release went out, I believe, and discuss what they were doing. And I pointed out that I understood that we don't have necessarily regulatory authority over them, but I'd be really disappointed if in 10 or 20 years from now I'm still driving by some falling apart facility with tin blowing off and a big mess out there. And they assured me that day, without hesitation, that it was their full intention of reclaiming. And I have been in touch with Al Christensen and Rachel Ritterath and Lyndon Anderson throughout this process. And they even held off on the reclamation of the water intake. And I don't know, again, if that was their plan, but I requested that they hold off on that as long as possible and give me some time. I worked with the Commerce Commissioner at that time to see if there was something in the development phases that someone might want to build in an area with a good state highway, railroad service right next to an electric plant with a river water intake setting there, and nothing was ever found for it. So, I mean... timing is everything in economic development, I guess, and nothing developed. But bottom line is, in working with GRE people, they were very accommodating to try to make efforts to use what could be useful, but reclaim it, especially with the highway work on the interstate. My trips back and forth to home at Hazen have been almost always all summer here through Washburn and past this facility, and it's both sad in that it needed to go, but I'm happy for the progress on reclamation and looking forward to it being done and looking almost like a greenfield site here by another year or two from now. And so I believe the GRE's voluntary reclamation of the Staten Station is very deserving of the 2019 State Reclamation Award.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I was really excited to see this project for the ward as well. So, I think GRE deserves a lot of praise and accolades for the work that they're doing out there. And they really have gone above and beyond and taking care of that site in a way that just isn't required by law and at significant cost to the company. So that community and the state as a whole deserves to recognize them. And they are a good example of a corporate citizen doing things right.
Yeah. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
My third and final motion, I move the Commission adopt the order certifying use of Federal Universal Services Support and Public Service Commission, USF Use Certification 47 CFR 54.314, 2020, compliance case number PU-19-197.
Second.
So this is another one I get excited about because of my my previous work as a director of one of these phone co-ops. This is really, really important to them and to the members they serve. The Telecommunications Act of 1996, the Federal Telecommunications Act, requires the telecommunications carriers that use universal service support or that they use universal service support only for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which support is intended by that law. Telecommunications carriers must file an annual certification with the state PSC stating this, and the state certification must be filed with the FCC by October 1st of each year in order for certified telecom carriers to receive support for the following year. On August 28th of 2002, the North Dakota Public Service Commission issued an order indicating that any telecommunications carrier providing local exchange service in the state should file an affidavit with the PSC by September 14th of each year, certifying that federal support they receive is used as intended. That 2002 order, which we still operate under, declares that affidavits filed with the PSC will be the basis for the PSC's certification to the FCC. But they only have that short timeline. They have to have that to us by September 14th. We need to have it to the FCC by October 1st. So everything has to fall into place, and we usually only have one meeting to get this done. So affidavits regarding use of federal USF support were filed by, I believe I counted, 41 companies on the list, certifying that all federal support that was used in the preceding calendar year and all federal support that will be used in the coming calendar year will be used for the provision, maintenance, and upgrading of facilities and services for which the support is intended.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I don't have any significant issues with this, but I will just ask, Randy, since you've worked with this for a number of years and you might have a different perspective, then I always am a little irritated by this requirement that we do this, and mostly because it's the federal government that is putting on us the work to certify things that relate to their programs, and we don't really have the staff to dig into all of these things and see whether the companies are doing what they're saying they're doing. So it always kind of bugs me because it feels like the federal government is sort of washing their hands of this and saying, well, you guys, it's up to you to check this out and make sure that these guys are doing what they are supposed to be doing. So, I mean, we do it every year and we kind of go through the process, and I have no reason to believe that the companies aren't doing what they're saying they're doing. But the truth of the matter is this is kind of a federal program, and it's their job to, in my view, to follow through on the requirements. Am I off? And please tell me if I am so I can quit being irritated by this.
Well, you know, I think it's fine that you're irritated by it, but I presume that you're not surprised by it, that the federal government would have a program and pawn off the work on someone else. But because that is basically what's happening.
Yeah.
Now, they did make clear, as did the 2002 commission's order, made clear that, I guess for a little coverage, that our order is based on their affidavits. And that really is what we're basing this on. They've signed an affidavit, I presume under penalty of law. And so that's what we base our order on. But there is something else that I think would cause us to get suspicious and potentially dig deeper if it wasn't working. And that would be if we would see co-op areas where the service is terrible. And we're not. What we're seeing is in the areas served by these companies that qualify for this universal service support, we've seen them go from being, what we used to refer to as POTS, plain old telephone service providers, who did it very well, to all of a sudden, you know, if you lived close enough, you could maybe get DSL. Otherwise, you would have dial-up, but you could actually get internet service from your telecom. And then all of a sudden they started laying fiber and became, in fact, to the point that they've renamed their association, that they're broadband providers. It's really their key thing. And we look at maps and the amount of broadband capability that's out there. And so, you know, can we certify that no one has misled us and that there's some pocket of this money being used inappropriately? It would be pretty hard for us to do with what the tools that we have. But the fact of the matter is we do see pretty good evidence that universal service funds being used by these carriers are having an absolutely phenomenal and tremendous impact on North Dakota and doing some wonderful things. So.
Well, then to that extent, having us closer to them and hearing that stuff does make sense. So there's some value to putting us in charge of this.
So,
is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed signify by saying nay. Motion is approved.
Concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner Chrisman. As we were going through that, I wasn't entirely sure that I shouldn't be even more irritated with the federal government than I was before. But so now I'm going to have to think about that after the meeting. In terms of announcements, on a more serious note, we have a formal hearing today at 1:30 for administrative rules. And that will include pipeline safety, solar decommissioning, energy conversion facility, siting criteria, and wind decommissioning. So that is at 1:30 here in the commission room on the 12th floor, in the hearing room at the commission, 12th floor of the state capitol. Our next regular commission meeting is on Wednesday, October 2nd. And we also have an informal hearing on that day as well, on October 2nd, and that will be for North American Local, LLC. It's a telecom, and that is a designated eligible carrier application. And then it's probably not too early, but just looking out a little bit further on Wednesday, October 9th, at 9:30 a.m., we're going to have a wind industry semi-annual meeting, and I believe that's the first of its kind for that industry. We do it for other industries, but that'll be on Wednesday, October 9th, and again here at the Commission Hearing Room. We will now take a short break, short recess, and take questions from the press, followed by the administrative portion of the meeting. This meeting is now in recess.